disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in.
Traveler reminds us each week, it's definitely most precarious out there, brothers and sisters, but don't you dare give up and don't you dare give in. We have way too much still to accomplish in this mad world. Greetings from the Upper West Side of New York City. Jack Tuckner and Deborah Orell here with you for another live edition of Women's Rights in the Workplace Radio on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM. While most of our listeners tune into our podcast at their convenience, if you're listening live now and you have a question for our distinguished guest, please feel free to call us at 888-874-4888, and you'll speak with one of our indefatigable sound engineers, and we'll get you right on the air. We are fortunate enough today to have with us in the studio Ms. Elena LaTourette, the Vice President and Board Co-Chair of WeAreWoman.us. Elena grew up in Sinanon, an experimental community, where she was raised to identify people as individuals rather than differentiating by race, gender, or religion. Those values influence her everyday life, her parenting, her advocacy, and her activism. She believes when cultural and social attitudes, along with the law, restrict reproductive rights and fail to protect women, we are all oppressed. The freedom to decide what happens with and to our bodies gives us control over our lives and makes us empowered. Thank you, Elena, for joining us today. We're really pleased to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're
That's
welcome.
That's a heck of a powerful bio.
Yeah. Sinanon, we would have liked it there in the 60s and 70s, I'm sure. It would have been fun. Well, we could maybe talk about that another time, but I did want to speak today and jump right into We Are Woman is your organization.
Yes.
That you're passionate about and committed to, and the work that you do. And I just want to mention the vision of We Are Woman is to be leaders. This is right from WeAreWoman.us's website. Please take a look. Our vision is to be leaders in driving positive change to protect the rights of women and families, to contribute to reversing anti-woman legislation throughout the United States, and to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. It's about time after 91 years. And We Are Woman's strategy is to develop a strong, effective coalition in order to strengthen our position and our ability to successfully counter anti-women actions, put an end to anti-woman and anti-family issues, and to ratify the ERA. Is that?
Yeah, well, that's that's pretty much it in a mouthful.
So let me Elena, let me just set this up with a little bit of background for our listeners, and then we'll jump right in of what we're talking about. So in January 2010. The Supreme Court of the United States, the highest court in the land, decided Citizens United versus FEC. And that was an appallingly corrupt and objectively outrageous decision by the court majority, the five old, white, wacky, formaldehyde-preserved Catholic men, again, on the highest court in our land, which capped a long line of bad decisions on corporate stature and power. And this one really clinched it by deeming corporations to be persons, i.e. people, under the U.S. Constitution, and that its money represents speech for First Amendment purposes. Then just this year, 2 months ago, in the so-called Hobby Lobby case, the same five reactionary old sexist relics on the court said that women's reproductive health care is less important, quote, well, this is not from the decision, this is from another article, quote, than a woman's boss's superstition-based prudery and moral trepidation about fornication for female pleasure. They ruled that it doesn't matter if birth control actually causes abortions. It only matters if business owners sincerely believe that birth control causes abortions. They ruled that it's okay for a corporate person, to discriminate against a female semi-person and dictate that she not spend her compensation on stuff that might possibly be enabling sex without consequences if they believe that God thinks they should. Female semi-persons who work for these company persons can simply obtain their birth control directly from the government, so the Supreme Court said. Of course, none of the five men behind the majority ruling have ever suffered from endometriosis, painful periods, dangerous pregnancies, or simply risked becoming pregnant at a time that they weren't mentally, fiscally, or physically prepared for pregnancy. They bought Hobby Lobby's, quote, religious liberty argument, despite the fact that Hobby Lobby doesn't personally object to covering vasectomies for men. Their religion only applies slut panic, so-called, to women. The court won't classify Hobby Lobby's woman-only, scientifically illiterate objections to contraception as discrimination against women, but it would be discrimination if Hobby Lobby's religious objections applied to black people or gay people. Are you following? Me neither. This was a quote from Erin Gloria Ryan in a piece she wrote for Jezebel just last month when the decision came out. So corporations are persons with religious freedom, yet the female gender among us can't get their equality as full human beings embodied in the U.S. Constitution, try as we all might, for the past over 90 years now. So do I have that right so far, Elena? And if so, what's the good news from the women's rights front that you may bring for our listeners today?
Well, it's actually quite frustrating when you look at how corporate personhood and fetal rights are being pushed and promoted, and women's rights, as far as our laws are concerned, are getting smaller and smaller. Our access to health care and abortion and birth control, family planning, that window is just in specifically, if you want to know where not to live, I would say North Dakota definitely wouldn't be on my list. But seeing all of this and reading everything every day, it's really hard not to feel like women are under attack and our personal freedoms and liberties are under attack. So if you want to look at a positive and where it might all be going and look on the bright side, is a lot of women are very frustrated and very angry. And a lot of women are starting to look at the political scene and structure not as something in the immediate, but starting to look at what's called the long game.
Okay.
And when you look at the long game, you have to start to think strategies and empowerment and what can we do to support one another so that we have enough women in positions of power so we can start to turn the table and start to change laws and affect government and both local, at state and federal, and ways that positively affect our lives and empower us.
So why do we still need it? You know, those of us, I think the three of us sitting around this table, going back to the 60s and 70s, we're all sort of second wave feminists. We could look back and say, certainly there was a time when everybody understood what the ERA even was, and we were fighting for it in the streets and so forth. And now the answer is equal. Here's the Equal Rights Amendment. Very simply, you could tweet it all out, I think, in less than a quarter of a tweet. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That's all it says, right? So now, as a lot of people say to me all the time, there was a decision in the 70s where the Supreme Court said that the 14th Amendment applies to women. We do have Title VII Equal Rights, but we do have the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. We have laws, because people call our firm all the time and say, I'm a woman, I'm being treated differently, and we say that's illegal. So why do we still need, can you speak to what your answer is to that when young women might say to you, your own daughters might say, what do I care about the ERA for?
I actually get this question all the time, and I feel that we need it because it will give us constitutionally protected gender equality. And I feel that not enough people can see the relationship between laws and politicians and what goes on in our own lives. And what you really need is when a case goes before the Supreme Court, then they can go to the Equal Rights Amendment and it can be said that women's rights are protected by this amendment. And that's a very, very powerful and important thing, because obviously, as you've seen with the Hobby Lobby decision, the 14th Amendment didn't do anything for us because
exactly. In other words, there's no hard backstop. Right? I'm saying you could say that. I mean, it is sad, too. I'll just say also for those young folks among us who don't really know the history of this. In 1789, the U.S. Constitution granted citizens' rights only to property-owning white males. And then the 14th Amendment in 1868 stated, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunity of citizens in the United States. But those citizens were clearly not women because they were defined, included then, black men, but not women. And that's what the always sort of despicable Justice Antonin Scalia recently said, that there really isn't any, the 14th Amendment, other than that a court said, well, it should apply to women. Hello, only half of our
Can
species.
I also just
Please.
Add that when the 14th Amendment became an amendment, ratified is the proper word,
right?
Women did not have the right to vote and
exactly.
would not be given that right for
1920.
Right.
40 years?
Exactly.
I'm not that good at math,
so,
but it was a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
again, and that's actually pretty amazing when you think about it, because it's not that long ago when you're talking about the 20th century. Until the 20th century, the women among us couldn't vote, you know, were disenfranchised so totally. So, I mean, again, part of the, when people say, but wait a minute, you're looking at thousands of years of human history where, unless we go back before the women, like the female principle was kind of quashed perhaps by organized religion or whenever that shift happened, we used to revere female gods and women, you know, perhaps like a separate but equal thing, but we did. Until that happened and it become what we've become as a race of sort of a patriarchal species, it's gotten better, has it not? I mean, if you look at, you know, my daughters will say to me, Dad, you talk about all this stuff, but we can vote, and we may make 83 cents on the dollar, but I could be a doctor and a lawyer. I could be whatever I want to be now, unlike Mom and unlike Grandma. So is there backlash now? Has it gotten better? Are we simply looking backwards and comparing ourselves to what's the story, and why aren't we grateful to the how feminists and the pro-feminists among us to where we are today? Why are we still looking at it as, the glass is half empty? Is that because it's getting worse again because of the backlash?
Well, first let me say that if I'm grateful for anything is that I live in the United States and not in other countries where women's rights, everything that they do is so controlled and they are so oppressed that often there are women that kill themselves because they can't just have a vocation. So I'm very grateful to live in this country. I feel that, let's see.
Although we are one of the only civilized nations that doesn't have paid maternity leave, and a lot of things that put us at the bottom of the list, right?
There are a lot of things that do put us on the bottom of the list, but still I'm grateful
we
that
don't
I'm
have general
here
mutilation,
and not elsewhere.
Right.
That I have clean water, clean air, things like that,
okay.
and opportunity, but just not an equal opportunity.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's true.
And that's why the importance of the ERA, that it's in the Constitution so that corporations and fetuses are not more important than me.
And, of course,
right.
if there's an actual or potential court or, you know, tries to write or enforce or adjudicate laws inequitably, the ERA would send a strong preemptive message. I think that's what you were saying.
Yes.
It's a bulwark.
So I brought with me an article from the National Women's Law Center.
Okay.
And it's a fact sheet, and it's about in 2013, state-level abortion restrictions, an extreme overreach into women's reproductive health care is the title of of the article. And basically, in 2013,
mm-hmm.
22 states enacted a total of 70 abortion restrictions, the second highest number of abortion restrictions to become a law in a single year.
Huh.
These states' restrictions are dangerous overreach into women's personal medical decisions. I feel that it's hard not to feel that there's a backlash It's hard not to feel that somehow this is intentional or coming from some level of fear from... I'm not quite sure what exactly the fear is. Female empowerment, equality, all of the things that having an equal rights amendment can change, all of the ways in which protecting and empowering women with the law can sort of start to equal, you know, even out the scales a little bit. I think that there is a fear. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think it's more of a collective fear that ends up resulting in different laws being made to restrict women so that women can't rise above.
Right. Isn't it, don't you think it's this fear, this backlash, this, I think, according to, I don't know where I just found this, but... There 38 states last year, it's probably what you were just saying, but I saw introduced more than 300 provisions seeking to limit women's access to care this year. Maybe it was more than just, you know, just limit women's access to care. And some, so it's just, it's undeniable that there's a focus on ending abortion and on risk. Obviously, I think what state is it? Texas that has one abortion care provider now? I mean, it's clear.
Mississippi.
So, but isn't it inextricably tied to sort of the corporate personhood in that all of that, and that's why it's sort of the whole Citizens Unite, as we become more wedded to the notion of this like corporate hegemony, power, it's like almost all male, that ethos, it's all like domination, it's all about us and money, and women perhaps will sort of inject that sort of the other side of that, the yin and the yang of it, that when corporations can spend all they want and can have it their way. That's why now there's 37 lobbyists in D.C., and there used to be 231 before Reagan took office. That power overwhelms the us, which are the people, the 99%, but women are a distillation of it in such a way that if we defeat women and bring us back to the 19th century, the 18th century, the 17th century, which is where we've been headed, it is a Republican war on women, right? I mean, we don't mince words about that, do we?
I do.
You do?
I don't
okay.
like to make it a bipartisan okay. issue because I... know women who are Republicans who feel exactly the same way about me, and I know men who are Republicans, even though I don't understand why, but they have their reasons,
well,
who
makes
also
them
feel
a Republican,
the same.
Elena? That what I would say to them if you cross examine.
I don't even ask those questions anymore
okay.
because it's a blurry line there okay. sometimes.
Okay.
But
well, it's a okay.
Yeah, I try
fair
to
enough.
To stay away from, but and I didn't always. It's just that I've met so many people in doing this that I've met a surprising amount of Republicans who feel the same way that I feel about these issues. I'm going to go back to the long game answer.
Okay.
This strategy to chip away at Roe v. Wade, this has been going on since Roe v. Wade became law and since abortion became legal.
Right.
So this is very strategic. I don't know who is coming up with the overall strategy, but even when you take the Hobby Lobby case wasn't really about freedom of religion. It was about striking down the American Health Care Act.
Right.
So
I was
we're
say
not
that.
We're not we're it it's a group of persons, lawmakers, who are taking the freedom of religion and the religious standpoint and expressing it through, oh, well, religion says this and my religion forbids that, as a crutch to fall back on putting all of these laws into place and making it a moral issue. But these same people who would deny a woman the right to abortion would also support the death penalty. So then is the idea, well, we let them be born and then we kill them later?
Well, but they also, the same people who would deny a woman's right to choice and are supporting the death penalty are also against free education and against unemployment benefits and against food stamps and against, they're against really
even
everything.
More than, even more than those, it could be viewed, and I am not a conspiracist either, but if you can control a group, So if women do not have rights, I don't have to, as a person, corporation, pay them maternity leave. I don't have to make accommodations to them because they have no legal right to it. And therefore, that's what that subtle, unconscious treatment. That's why women discriminate against women. Blacks discriminate against blacks. There's this bias within our unconscious. There's that we're just not aware of, because in regular day-to-day life, I'm too busy. You know, what can I do? It's the politicians. You know, screw them. I'm too busy to get involved with this. But as far as this reproductive rights, they would actually then have to begin paying for things they don't want to pay for. So it's cheaper for them to fight against all of this stuff. And they do it just like Hobby Lobby did. Under this religious, that was what the PR was about, but the case was actually about the knocking another chip away at the Affordable Care Act. Why? Because companies would have to pay for it.
Okay, but why? When you're saying the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, again, everybody talks about how many times, you know, the Republicans tried to repeal it. What is it? What does it stand for? It only provides for women now a law that you can express milk in the workplace after you have a baby, and all kinds of good things. It's obviously how many more millions of people now are covered. It's a tiny step in the right direction to single payer. But when you talk, right?
So
tiny, but that's what I mean. So now you said, well, but the court still wants to strike it down. They want to strike down anything that's not sort of an Ayn Randian notion of I got mine, screw you, get yours. And women, it just seems that women are sort of a lightning rod, female issues, for whatever, it just sort of brings out the misogynistic, I think, in that cultural imperative of, like, fuck them all. And I don't know why that the idea of we're not for rebuilding this economy, another New Deal, right, another great society, let's put people back to work. Again,
okay,
it's not a bipartisan. I mean, it's
okay,
kind of
forget the politics part of it.
Okay.
Just look at the people.
The economics
of it. This is why we're talking, why it's all intrinsically connected. Women's rights, human rights, reproductive
rights.
All of it.
So here's one of the things that We Are Women is doing.
Okay.
Is we're building a coalition. And we're calling on other grassroots organizations that are fighting for human rights and equal rights to join together as a coalition to support one another in this struggle. Because clearly the corporations, the religious right, and all of those other fractions that are chipping away at our rights are also joined together in a coalition.
Right.
Sort of like, I hear you represent that. Well, I represent that too. Well, let's join together and be a little more powerful. Well, if they can join together and be more powerful, I suggest we join together and become more powerful. And here's I'm going to quote my grandfather, it's a familiar term, but a people divided will never be united. And as long as we fight amongst ourselves and keep looking at one another and all of those things that make us different, instead of uniting behind those things and those causes that make us the same and bring us together, then we won't be able to present a united front, and we won't be able to make change the way that we should have this country be, in a country that truly represents us, the people.
But we, the people, are not represented in this country.
We are
only
not.
Corporations. Money is what is represented, and money is speech is power. And that's what this is all about, is about the Koch brothers, just as an example, wanting to thwart anything that could possibly cost them money, and business that could possibly cost them money, which is why we're not all in this together. We really are. That's why income inequality is what it is. Women are just you know, really at the bottom. And women of color are even lower.
Well, if we don't amend the Constitution to get money out of politics, that might be, although...
Getting money out of politics would be...
Well, I think what a solution becomes is that people, we the people, need to take the power back. And call me optimistic because I am a 60s baby and I did, you know, my parents marched on Washington with Martin Luther King, and I feel that if we the people join together to fight for these human rights, these dignities, pay equality, these things that can lift all of us up as mm-hmm. a country, better education, access to health services, birth control, family planning, choice for women, access to voting,
equal pay,
all of these things. If we the people join together, we can be a powerful, powerful movement. And I think now, more than ever, I mean, I'm sorry, but the 60s and the 70s, all of those people joining together did not have the internet where you can just communicate in a second,
mm-hmm.
get a lot of people together and on the same page about something or talking or focused. I mean, that's how we are women met through the internet. So why not use the power of the internet for good
mm-hmm.
to get people together to start to initiate change and not just keep it online, but show out and force in the voting booth, show up and force at one another's demonstrations, rallies, marches, so that our representatives can start to see that we the people are, first of all, not happy with what's going on, feel they are not representing us, and we the people are ready for change.
Right. Well, I'm with you, sister, but the difference is this, and I think social media can and will save us. If anything's going to save us the way it did, you know, Twitter was the Arab Spring, and if we're able to, we the people, coalesce, it'll be because of social media. But what we didn't have in the 60s and 70s, the elimination of the Fairness Doctrine, Glass-Steagall, and all the Steagall, and all of the problems of having all the Fox so-called news watchers, all of the people in the heartland out there that are getting the corporate media line, us, because look at Occupy Wall Street was we the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was the same issues. No, really, it was, except it couldn't really get the footing because you can't keep up with $500 billion, $1 million from Shelley Adelson.
Right.
So here, We Are Women is having a rally September 13th. In Washington, D.C. It's actually the 12th. We're having a day of action with congressional visits that's actually being organized by ERA Action and PDA, Progressive Democrats of America.
Okay, great.
And that's happening on the 12th. And on September 13th, we're having a rally on the West Front Lawn mm-hmm. in front of the U.S. Capitol. And if I go online and I look at the people who are talking about the rally, the people who have registered and RSVP'd for the day of action for showing up at the rally, in addition to all of the people who are now pledging to vote, I have people who are from all 51 states, or however many states we have.
It's
but,
all 50.
Okay. And sometimes Puerto Rico.
Right.
But nobody from Puerto Rico is on that list. But I feel that especially in New York City, we have this view of the United States as being like, this is New York, it's huge, and everything else is really small till you get to California, and all of these opinions are, and the way people feel are all these set ways. Well, I'm learning that there are plenty of people, women and men, by the way, who are just as unhappy as
sure.
I am.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
All across the United States, in all of these states.
Well, all the polls say that people like the Affordable Care Act, and Congress still keeps trying to repeal it. So we, the people, are not being heard.
Shouldn't they be doing something else by now? I
well,
mean, there's other things
think.
That we need think. To work on in this
yeah.
country.
Yeah, well, you would
the,
think.
A poll, an April 2012 poll for Daily Kos, Service Employees International, asked, quote, "Do you think the Constitution should guarantee equal rights for men and women or not?" The responses were 91% yes, 4% no, and 5% not sure. Once you take out the question about the Equal Rights Amendment, you take the words out that are loaded, and you just ask the question, should it be fair? The whole, of course, overwhelmingly, we all agree with that, but that's just not how it's spun by the media. Isn't so let me ask you, first of all, let me just say...
Well, not even by the media, but by the... lobbyists.
Right. So how do people get involved, though, first of all, right now? Just our listeners and people get involved on the day of action. How can they sign up?
You can go to rallyhub.wearewoman.us. And on the Rally Hub, there is a section of what can I do. And you can take the pledge. You can register for the day of action and RSVP for the day of action and register for the rally. In addition, you can go to wearewoman.us, which is our website, and you can also take the pledge on the website as well.
Yeah, is I was going to say the rally, there's a tab there for that.
Yes.
I think
oh,
there, I did
it's
that.
Accessible
yeah.
just through wearewoman.us.
Yes.
All of
it's
it.
Accessible through wearewoman.us, and also the Rally Hub is accessible through wearewoman.us. U.S. also.
And is there some coordination of transportation or do people just...
So there is coordination of transportation. We have a forum right now that basically if you're in a state, you can find your state on the forum and start to talk to people in that forum that might be coming to the rally and can help you get to the rally, help give you a ride, or give you advice on other ways to get there. We also have on the Rally Hub, we have a listing of different transportation companies. If people want to charter buses, they're bus charter companies, okay. so that you can contact them, see if they have buses in your state, and put together a group of people who would just chip in to pay for a bus. And I believe in New York, Bolt Bus goes to D.C. Union Station, so you can actually take Bolt Bus there.
Okay.
Or I'm taking Amtrak. But.
Okay. And are people just on their own is there any for lodging, or is there a place where some people are communing up?
So we had some blocks of rooms, I believe, at the Phoenix, and I don't... Let me see if I could pull it up on the website. It would be on the Rally Hub also.
Okay. Yeah. Okay,
all the different hotels.
Yeah. It's there. Okay, I didn't notice it, but as long as it's
right.
there.
Right. And then the other thing I would like to mention is that we came up with this idea. Now, on Capitol grounds, you cannot solicit for money, and you can't engage in commerce or solicit for votes or anything. Don't mean like in Congress where things actually happen. I'm talking like on the west front lawn of the Capitol where we're having the event. So we ran into issues the last time we did this. We had a rally also in 2012, and people had to leave to go get food. We couldn't sell food there. We had water that we were giving out, which we will also have water available to people. But we've teamed together with a gourmet catering service. And on Rally Hub, we're selling boxed lunches and breakfasts.
In advance, obviously.
In advance, mm-hmm. as a way to fundraise. But also as a way, since we can't sell food there, if people can purchase in advance, then they can pick up their... We'll have a spot where people can pick up their... food.
Which they need to do unless they bring their own.
Right. Unless okay. which they're, you know, you totally can do. It's just, there were a number of people constantly asking me if I knew where they could go get something to eat. We had tried to find out if we could get some food trucks to come, but they can't get within a certain distance of the Capitol. So, no, we couldn't get food trucks to come, and this was our solution.
So can anyone show up? I mean, do you need a T-shirt? Do you need to be part of a group?
Anyone can show up.
Just show up. Just show up.
Yeah, you can just show up. We're asking people to bring umbrellas, which we did last time. The purpose for the umbrellas originally, which also turned out to be very symbolic, because the suffragists, women stood with their umbrellas in the rain, the sunshine, the snow, trying to get the right to vote. So the umbrellas are symbolic, but also you can't have anything that gives you shade on Capitol, on the lawn. So there's no canopies, no shading. Okay. So our first rally was in August of 2012, and it was very hot. So we asked people to bring umbrellas, and we also provided some umbrellas and to decorate the umbrellas. And we had some art supplies there, and we'll have art supplies again for people to decorate umbrellas.
So for our younger viewers that didn't have civics courses because they were eliminated, explain who the suffragists are, the suffragist women you mentioned that are there, the people saying, well, I thought women had the right to vote since 1920. Who are these suffragist women? We're talking about now voter suppression. Just explain who these people were and who are when you refer to suffragist women.
Oh, boy. So we have Alice Paul, and we have, now I have to.
Stanton, Katie.
Yeah, Elizabeth Katie Stanton, who her great granddaughter or great great granddaughter is one of our speakers.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name, but who are they?
I'm saying
they're the women. They are predecessors that fought so hard so we could have the right to vote and felt that women needed their own party and needed to be equally represented in the eyes of the law because we just were not treated equally and fairly. And by allowing women to vote, then women would start to
have a voice,
and have laws enacted that, or influence laws to be enacted that protect women and protect families.
But what I was just referring to, Alice Paul is long since gone, right?
Yes, but there's still the Alice Paul Institute.
Okay, who are the suffragists now alive and well holding up umbrella? There's a group calling themselves still suffragist women, meaning there's work yet to be done in voter access and so forth?
I don't think any one group actually calls them. There probably is. If you do an internet search, I'm sure you will find a group of suffragist women.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody saying
There is the Alice Paul Institute. There are a lot of organizers out there that do not want the memory of these women to die, but also do not want what they fought so hard for to have been fought for in vain and to be reversed.
Right.
So all of us, are somewhat modern suffragists.
Well, I think we're called feminists now.
Oh, yeah, we are called feminists.
That's right. And pro-feminists.
I like to call us feministas.
Feministas.
Okay.
Well, we don't speak Yiddish, so we don't understand that word. I want to just ask you this. So the ERA, just to leave this, the Equal Rights Amendment, we all agree that its time has come.
Yes.
Long since come. And there's an engraving over the Supreme Court. I've been to the Supreme Court of the United States. An engraving over it that says equal justice under the law. That would guarantee, finally, equal justice for more than half of our population when it's fought. So it's kind of a no-brainer. And anyone who is, and there are still states and are still, of course, again, many legislators who oppose. Right? I mean, it's up every year, right? It never passes.
Right.
Okay. So we do have mostly male lawyers in Congress that just say, not quite yet. We're not really ready for
it. We don't need to waste our time on that one.
You know, my question is, if it's not such a big deal, then why not just pass it already?
Well, and what's your answer to that?
I would have to go back to the economic repercussions that passing the Equal Rights Amendment would have.
You mean like chicks will have more power?
Basically,
is that what they're
yes.
saying? And then it'll like it'll mess with my job and my ability to be a big swinging,
profit.
You know what?
My okay. profit.
So speaking of profit, can we talk a little bit now, segue into reproductive justice? And I just wanted to just talk to you about, because we mentioned before we started the show, and perhaps you could just explain a little bit if there is a difference between reproductive rights and reproductive justice. And I'll just say this a little bit that I... When I think we were talking, I was talking with Deborah about the situation right now in Ferguson, Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so when you have a country right now where, again, and, you know, maybe I'm sort of mixing metaphors and all, but where still young men of color, gunned down, I don't know that we haven't had in a long time this type of just sort of almost surrealistic and overt repression to the extent where, like, for instance, Michael Brown, whether or not he took a cigarillo from a store that the cop didn't know about, he was murdered, 8 shots to his body, 3 in his face, by a cop walking the street to his grandmother's. And we don't have the same kind of reaction, obviously, that we would as we didn't toward a young woman who ran up and was shot in the face by someone who, you know, thought she was a black person yelling at him, and that was okay. There is a... And then we have the militarization... The military-industrial complex selling where these police force. I mean, right? We saw a
Yay
tank,
surplus weapons.
An armored tank with right. with a machine gun trained at the 10,000 residents that are peaceably exercising their First Amendment, and they're showing this on TV like it's and a lot of people.
I don't know. It looks like strikingly like it's a Brown versus Board of Education.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody's
right.
going to school for the first day.
Right.
We need to have
right.
National Guard out.
Exactly. And the National Guard is out now. So how does that, you know, in the intersectionality of all this, and you mentioned, what was the name of the organization that I, Sisters?
Sister Song.
Sister Song. And I was just reviewing their website earlier today, and it's beautiful. And they talk about the distinction, let me just say this as badly as I might frame this issue. Second wave feminists were all kind of about we, the more or less privileged, relatively privileged sort of white women, that it's about choice. We have the choice what to do with our bodies vis-a-vis abortion. And New York, you want to go to Park Med and spend $500 on your abortion back in the day or today or whatever it costs, knock yourself out. But women of color and other more marginalized folks were saying, but we don't even have that choice, really. We don't have the choice. There isn't really a choice because we're not even up to that yet. We don't have necessarily the choice of what physicians we see with Planned Parenthood. They're closing because they think it's all about abortion, but that's where we go for our reproductive health and examinations and mammograms. So is there a connection? Can you explain what reproductive justice is compared with sort of plain old reproductive rights like I should be or all women should be or the women that I love in my life should have the freedom to say, no, but you know what, this is my body. And you're not, you know, you're not telling me what to do with my body. I understand there may be, you know, a fetus in it, but it's my body. If men got pregnant, there'd be an abortion clinic on every corner. I think we all agree.
Absolutely.
So can you talk a little bit about what reproductive justice is?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel that there truly are no reproductive rights unless there is reproductive justice. And when you uh-huh. talk about reproductive justice, you are talking about the limit to access for women of color, families of color, because it is a family issue, and women who are of a lower economic in the lower economic strata, because of course, economics, the more money you have, the more choices you have.
Right.
I mean, that's just like basically how it goes. So when we're talking about a huge slice of the population of the United States being women, and then we take the population of women and we break it down into just on all those lines, like where women fall in the socioeconomic, you know, pie, and then we take that pie and we further start to divide it, and we look at availability, access, choice, because freedom really is the opportunity to choose what's going to happen with your life, to be able to have control over those choices. The poorer you are, the less control you have over your life.
Here in the United States,
in the United States, in the world.
Yeah.
Well, but not
but in the United States.
Wait, let me just finish. Sure, I'm sorry.
So then when you take a look at the demographics of who's poorest in this country, you start to really see how the poorest people don't have choices, and many of the poorest people are people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so having or immigrants. So what happens is that when you start to enact laws and change things culturally and socially to even out the platform for people and create opportunities for people not to be impoverished, then you start to have a truer sense of equality.
So we're back to economic justice.
Yeah,
though.
It is. It all comes down to economic justice. It's a money game, no matter which side of it that you're playing.
Okay, but in the last 10 years, that 95% of all new income went to the top 0.1%. And, I mean, that's sort of partly the root cause of this. Because, again, if we had if we lived in a Scandinavian country or some of the more civilized OECD countries where they all have single-payer health care, sort of socialized medicine, isn't that issue then less driven by, as you said before, the more money you have, the more choices you have? Shouldn't we have baselines? Shouldn't reproductive health care be a basic fundamental human right wherever you live?
Absolutely. It should be. It is. It
just
is a
like
fundamental
clean
human
water,
right.
Clean air is a right, so should health care.
Well, that's also on the skids now, too, in this country.
Okay, and when you're poorer, you're living in the dirtier air areas.
Okay.
Right.
Or
and
the toxic environment.
So I don't remember the name of the organization, but there is an organization that basically keeps an eye out for produce and grocery companies that serve large cities and urban environments. And the reason they do this is because the choice produce goes to the best neighborhoods, and the crap, half-rotten produce goes to the poor neighborhoods.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you live in poverty or just below the poverty line, and we're taught, you know, and specifically working poor, people who just work so hard and have trouble feeding their children.
That's more and more of us.
Right.
Right.
They're buying lettuce that doesn't last more than a day in the refrigerator.
So from just your basic groceries to your health care, to the place where you live, your access to fresh water, places where you know, there's still in the United States where you have like tuberculosis scares. I mean, we should be ashamed of ourselves to be such a developed country.
Right.
To have all of these issues, high infant mortality rates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean.
Well, we should be ashamed of ourselves that one in four kids have food insecurity, known as freaking hunger,
in the richest nation in the
world.
It's awesome how we are starting to restrict access to food stamps, and how, thanks to the wonderful Clinton administration, the social services have been
cut so
grossly that you now have only the poorest of the poor can maybe get social services. And you have this massive, massive growing group of people that don't qualify for services, but can't support themselves and can't live.
And yet 25% of American corporations pay no federal taxes at all. So
it's disgusting.
Of course, so I'm saying that.
It's disgusting. I'm trying not to stand on a soapbox here, but I just had dinner with a friend of mine who told me that her friend, who's a midwife, has an alarmingly high rate of deliveries in homeless shelters.
Because
housing in New York City,
is
it's obscene what you have to pay for rent to get anywhere close to, a workable distance to be able to travel right. back and forth right. to your home to have a job.
Right.
Okay.
And we have several clients who actually live in a shelter since they were fired from their job. That
so it's yeah. an outrage.
It's an outrage, and we just it's a shame, and it does always come back to economics, and it's really sad because the truth is that and it's obviously I'm sure there's lots of people like this, but plenty of people who aren't have trouble sleeping at night,
right?
Thinking about those people who don't have a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was a landlord charging $3,000 for an apartment in
a studio
apartment in like the outskirts of Brooklyn, Queens,
right.
where people are now just starting to push out farther and farther. And there are people who are living in shelters, families,
yeah.
babies being born in shelters.
Right. Well, it's disgusting. So.
Right. So when you talk about having choices, and if you want to go to those shelters and see the physical attributes that the people in those shelters have, you're going to find a lot of people of color and a lot of people who are immigrants in those shelters.
But it still comes down to our runaway sort of plutocracy and oligarchy that's forming where, again, the rich, of course, are getting richer and everybody else is suffering. And if more women, so back to how this is integrated, if more women voted, if more women were, we reach a critical mass of women in elective office one day, it has to shift. I mean, I think that it has to shift because, yes, there are women who think the same way, but mostly I think that sort of the corporate mentality of like the sort of Mitt Romney, the, you know, I got mine, fuck you, which is part, again, we can make it, there are plenty of blue dog Democrats. You're
yes.
right, it's party, you make it sort of by plenty of, listen, they all are bought and paid for these days. They should be wearing NASCAR patches on their suits because everybody, you can't, they dial for dollars all day long. The money is the sick part, and if we still had public funding of elections, we might be represented. So I'm just, you know, I mean,
right.
It's,
okay,
like,
so, but here's the thing, right, is while I want to see more women in positions of power, and I will continue to support women and fight for that, I want to see my representatives, whether they're men or women, represent me and represent the people of this country.
Right.
So regardless of how rich or how poor they are, regardless of what they look like or where they come from, they still should represent the people.
That's true.
And it's up to us to do that.
It is up to us. It's always up to us. It's just that our voices have been sort of somewhat squelched. It's not an excuse, but somewhat, and maybe it is this apathy, and maybe that's what social media, but there is, we are up against a rising tide of, you know, this, I mean, how do you compete if you're on a limited budget for advertising, you know, and they've got this unlimited, even foreign, undisclosed foreign money now as part of Citizens United. So it is, we better take to Twitter, right? We better get involved, all of us.
We have to use all of the social media that's at our disposal. Because I think back to my grandparents who fought so hard for unions to you know, there were no unions, so the reason we have unions are part of their efforts.
Right.
And they stood there with mimeographs, turning mimeographs, hand churning these flyers to get them out, to deliver to people, to spread
right.
the word. So if they can disseminate all of this information by a crank of a mimeograph machine,
we can start
a revolution by using social media
and
the internet.
Well, on this, I want to quote Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is now my idol this week.
We're not worthy.
So Ginsburg was interviewed in Santa Fe. She was asked, and I'm reading from this article. Ginsburg was asked what today's women can do to continue the fight for women's equality. Quote, how would you send each one of us into battle? The interviewer said. One obligation of all citizens is sadly neglected by some of us, Ginsburg answered, and that is the obligation to vote. The first thing you must do is express your opinion in the ballot box. Secondly, Ginsburg advised each person must have a passion about something that is important to other people, something you care about deeply that will benefit other people.
But look what she did, not her, but this, the power structure did to the Voting Rights Act. Gone! Gone.
Yeah.
So I'm saying voter suppression now, big. So a lot of people are disenfranchised. Students, old people, poor people don't have photo IDs. It's bullshit. We should have a day off. We shouldn't work. You know, when you on election day, we have to work. And so poor people, and they make them stand in line for hours. So that's why a lot of people are dissuaded. The question is, we're not making it easier. Labor Day coming up. You mentioned unions in the mimeographs. I mean, we have, 6% of unions? There were 39% in our lifetime,
yes.
Right? So it's really, now we have right to work for less states. So, I mean, we really are, that's what's sort of scary.
Regression. It's a frightening regression.
Exactly. And I just wanted to just say, because I think you may agree with this, I just found this from... this was quoted by the Center for American Progress, but it was the Asian Communities for Reproductive Justice, now known as Forward Together, that said, this is what reproductive justice is. The complete physical, mental, spiritual, political, economic, and social well-being of women and girls, and will be achieved when women and girls have the economic, social, and political power and resources to make healthy decisions about our bodies, sexuality, and reproduction for ourselves, our families, and our communities in all areas of our lives. Like, it's a holistic... That's the justice component. That's not just about,
yes,
do I have access to an abortion, right? That's the point why it's an integrated mosaic.
It's a very intricate, integrated mosaic. You can't start to pick at one piece of it and just
right.
expect that one piece to represent it. It's a huge picture.
So we all just have to get involved, get out, vote, and talk about these issues, right? Because if we can get our kids or our colleagues, sort of like the water cooler wars, as Tom Hartman calls it, where you engage people and sort of get one person to see they have to get involved, maybe we'll turn the tide in our lifetime. Is that, you're optimistic about that, Elena?
I've seen the tide go the opposite way in my lifetime, and I hope to see in my lifetime the tide flow back in the right direction, or should I say the left direction.
Nicely done. Well, we have a little less than 60 seconds left. I wanted to just remind our viewers that they can go to your website, www.wearewoman, right? We are woman, WOMAN.US.
Yes.
And they can, and if someone can't make the rally but wants to contribute, is there a place to donate something that they can afford on the
Absolutely.
Website?
Absolutely. We have a donate button on the website.
Okay.
And
PayPal?
PayPal.
Okay.
Totally.
Good. All right.
We accept PayPal.
Okay. You accept U.S. currency.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. And, Elena LaTourette, thank you very, very much for being with us. Is there anything last that you'd like to inform our listeners as the music comes on? And we're saying goodbye.
Just get out there and vote.
Yes.
Silence is compliance. And it's time for we the people to take the power back.
Whoa, sounds like the 60s.
Yeah.
Amen. Thank you very much, Ms. LaTourette.
Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome. On behalf of Jack Tucker, that's me, and Deborah Orell, and our staff at Women's Rights in the Workplace, thanks for listening, and get involved, and remember, whatever else you do, when you find yourself in confronting workplace challenges like pregnancy discrimination, sex harassment, equal pay problems, don't quit. We'll see you next week. Adios.